The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Biotech and healthcare stocks soar. The healthcare vote coming pretty soon. May's leading indicators met expectations, and a look at cyber and cryptocurrencies. All this and much more on episode number 515 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Well, hello and welcome. Andrew Horowitz here, and you are listening to the Disciplined Investor Podcast. I'm so glad that you have joined me. You know, we posted a quick Twitter tweet, and it showed that we had over 8 million downloads of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. And that's really thanks to you. Always, I got to tell you, just always thankful that I have such a great audience, such great communications, and the ability to have this kind of dialogue with you on a regular basis. So thank you so much for that. It is really wonderful. If you've been paying attention to the markets, yes, we have seen just an incredible rally in the biotech and healthcare stocks. And a good amount of that probably has to do with the fact that there's some hope, there's some thought that there will be a bill that will be coming to the floor of the Senate soon. They've been telegraphing that they want to get this done before the summer recess. And just this week, we heard that there is going to be a vote that's going to be put forth. Some of the details of the bill show some negative implications long-term for some people, a lot more uninsureds. A lot more insureds will lose insurance and become uninsured over time. But, you know, right now when we're looking at this, there is the hope that it won't be as onerous to many of the healthcare companies. And so far, what we're seeing as a result is that many of the biotech drug-related companies, as well as healthcare stocks, have done a great job at holding up with all of the issues that are going on and the concern and the confusion about what's actually going to play out here. So the good news is here that we have a market that seems to be having a significant bid to it. And the result has been a very nice move on many of the healthcare stocks, you know, probably the IBB index and the XBI, which is the S&P biotech index. They're up like 7 to 10% in the last week or so. That's pretty amazing. And I think when we look at this, we have to realize that there is this a lot of optimism that is being placed on what's going on right now. So, you know, I think that right now it's an interesting time to be in there. I think it's maybe a little bit overdone. It looks like it's buying the rumor. Who knows if we'll see a sell the news kind of situation that will be erupting soon. But many of the stocks and a few that we've mentioned before that we like have done extremely well, actually remarkably well recently. We'll see how that holds up. But clearly something that is holding up the markets, biotech and technology, the growth area of the S&P universe and the NASDAQ has been clearly doing extremely well over the last year, not to mention the last week or so. We also saw some things that were going on here in terms of not only this whole healthcare area, but economic numbers that came out recently are also looking pretty good. You know, I don't think there's any kind of significant slowdown on any aspect of that. We saw leading indicators come out at a plus 0.3%, and expectations were for about a plus 0.3%. So that's right in line with expectations. And other than that, we saw that initial claims were holding up well. We saw that existing home sales actually did really well as compared to what we saw last week, which was a slowdown in the pending and the new mortgage applications that kind of seem to have slowed down over the recent period. But existing home sales are still doing very, very well. And I think that's something to think about, because we're seeing that maybe what's happening is that there's a little bit of an abundance of new homes on the market, people looking to possibly get in on a little bit of fixer-uppers. They're interested in doing that. Maybe the prices are a little bit better in some areas. And so, well, you know, it happens. We see that. So some of the slowdown that we did see in housing numbers last week, maybe that was just transitory, or possibly the existing home sales that we saw this period were a blip. I don't know. We'll have to see how that plays out. But again, it's something I talked about last week that we want to keep an eye on. Now, I had some good questions come in that I'm going to, two of them in particular that I wanted to get to. And we're going to talk about that. One is related to the issue of gaps, of opening market gaps. And the other one is talking about the plunge protection team. But we'll get to that in a second. I wanted to just touch on this whole cyber cryptocurrency situation that's been going on. We know, everybody knows the word Bitcoin, but there's a lot of other ones out there. And we had a conversation about this a few weeks ago. I had a conversation with this also with Frank Curzio. And that was about 2 weeks ago. You can go to frankcurzio.com and check out my discussion with him. I've had so many discussions recently with people. One of the things that we saw last week was something that I had feared would happen. Now, we'll have to see how this plays out because these are usually not one-off events. So the second currency that a lot of people talk about is Ethereum, ETH. And last week, that had I'll call it a flash crash, down from the 300s to 130 in a matter of seconds. Now, it did pop up a little bit, but it was still down about 18% by the time it really never closes, but by the end of the day. You know, these cryptocurrencies don't close. They're open 24/7. Futures even close. You know, futures, you even see that there's a period over the weekend that they have a closing period, and during the day they have a 15-minute break, and then they're pretty much during the week, Monday through Friday, generally speaking, they're open all the time with a little 15-minute break. But over the weekend on Saturdays and up until about 6 p.m. on Sundays, futures are generally closed. Well, cryptocurrencies or cyber currencies, whatever you want to call them, they're open all the time, all the time. So you could trade them whenever you want. You get up at, 2:30 in the morning on a Saturday evening and put in some drunk trades. You've heard of drunk tweets. You can put in some drunk trades if you want. If you're out all night partying, you feel like just getting into the rhythm of some gambling with some of these. Well, a lot of people have been really gravitating towards these because they went from the idea of being an alternative currency to now a trading vehicle for day traders. Much different than I think they originally thought they were going to be, where they were going to have stability and alternative currency parameters to them. So that's not the case anymore. Now they're trading. So what we saw was this massive move, and it could have been something called the fat finger move, where somebody, instead of saying, I want to sell one, somehow pushed 1,000 or some other crazy number. And we call that a fat finger because they maybe moved over a couple of keys on the keyboard. The fat finger pushed the button and just wrecked it. Just obliterated it in a matter of seconds. So my concern here has been always the idea that there's a lot of players out there, and liquidity is, I just don't see the liquidity in this that we've seen in other assets, and clearly not in the same liquidity that you see in currencies and in stocks and in futures. And you play this and you may get caught on the wrong side of the stream here. And that would be very dangerous to the money you've invested. Now, okay, you have one Bitcoin, it's worth, let's say, or you buy and sell one Bitcoin or two Bitcoins, a few $1,000s, or Ethereum is down to 300, so maybe you're trading 10 of those at a time. So what? So you lose part of your money on that. Is it really life-shattering? No. But you start amassing these things and you think that this is going to be, the end-all be-all. It's going to go, as some of the stories have talked about, how Bitcoin's going to be $1 million, $1 million per coin in the future, within 20 years. Well, Then all of a sudden you're not buying and selling. You're saying, hey, I'm going to buy this and I'm going to hold on to it for some time because I'm waiting for that million. All the other guys got rich and I'm going to get rich too. And now you hold on to this thing. And all of a sudden there is a crack in the armor of this because there's so many other currencies, these cryptocurrencies that are trading. And again, the liquidity is just not there. And something happens, whether it's maybe a hack, maybe it's a fraudulent transaction, like we've seen in the past with some of these companies. Maybe it is a change in the law. We did see, of course, last week that I believe it was India is now, quote unquote, legitimizing and, quote unquote, legalizing these Bitcoins and these type of currencies. So I'm not sure how much that's going to add, but you start doing that and you start watching when these are added and without the liquidity situation, that's why they're rocketing higher. Now, this discussion, by the way, is not a slam on these per se, although I am concerned about it. It's a market discussion. The same thing would be true in the same discussion I would be having with you if we were looking at penny stocks or any other stock with very small float, where the price could be manipulated or it can move dramatically just on the push of a button. So I want you to think about that. And obviously, we could talk about all the benefits of this alternative asset class and how it could help diversify and it could help to kind of just move money out of certain currencies if you're concerned that there's going to be an erosion of the valuation of those due to the fact that you have governments that are doing all sorts of crazy things with regards to quantitative easing and money printing and devaluing and all that. But again, I'm not so sure that there's a significant amount of benefit if, in fact, there's going to be this much volatility. That's the Achilles heel of these things. The fact that there is so much volatility that is on a regular basis, not just here and there. Your currencies will have volatility, of course. You know, your traditional currencies, your dollar, your euro, your yen. But we're not talking about, I mean, if you see a 10% drop in a currency in a day, there's an implosion and something awful going on in the economy or politically related in a country. This is a regular occurrence for Bitcoin, for Ethereum, and all the other ones that are out there. So just something to think about. Again, I'm not necessarily thinking, wow, this is a terrible thing. Although I will also share with you, I'm not so convinced that this is a long-term solution that has scalability and the ability to have liquidity in order to be an investment that would be something that you could say is a long-term hold per se, at least not from what we're seeing now. If the fundamentals change, if there is a change in the way that is distributed and traded, fine. Now, as a trading vehicle, oh, hey, that's a different story. As a trading vehicle, well, have at it, right? I mean, I would say that's clearly something that is beneficial. The same thing with penny stocks or the same thing with any stocks out there or for futures, commodities. Definitely has the advantages of being something that you could trade. So just keep that in the back of your mind. I'll also mention as a programming note here, I think that we are going to be off air. I know you're panicking about this already. I'm taking a little vacation. So I think the week after that, we are not going to have a show. So that'd be second week of July, I think it is. Anyway, you'll know soon enough when you see it. You can always follow me on Twitter if you want to, over at Andrew Horowitz. One word is my handle over on Twitter. And you can also listen to me and John C. Dvorak each and every Tuesday evening on DH Unplugged, where we live stream, have a chat room. It's a lot of fun. You'll enjoy it. You can also find it on your favorite podcast service, of course. I also mentioned to you, there's also the audiobook, The Disciplined Investor. Do you know, maybe I haven't mentioned this in a while. Things have a way of doing that, you know, kind of something in the past. I wrote two books. The first one, The Disciplined Investor, and you can get that over on an audiobook. It's available, so if you want to do that. You know, some of the areas that we looked at have, I think, a staying kind of value to it, where you will be able to pick up a lot of real interesting ways of learning how to invest based on quantitative investing and filtering and screening, and what is really, when you look under the hood, what's the story with the fundamentals, and then, of course, the technicals. You get a real good view of that, as well as some other areas that I think you'd be interested in. And I narrate that, so if you can tolerate listening to my voice for a little while longer, you may want to pick that up over on Amazon, Audible. That's the Disciplined Investor book as well. So that's one that I really encourage you to check out. Let's see here. I wanted to just briefly just get to this, because this, I think, is in line with our last discussion of the flash crash, the gap down that we just talked about. And there was a question that came across with regard to the whole idea of gaps. So Bobby G writes in, he says, "Hey, Andrew, love both your show and DH Unplugged, both your shows. They keep me informed on general market conditions and ideas that I never would have thought of myself. I always like you, the way you theorize about news and events. I understand how supply and demand either raises or decreases a stock price. But could you explain the mechanics behind a stock's gap up or down at the market open?" So here's what's interesting. Let's go to the basics of what a gap means. And usually, obviously, a gap can happen at any given time, but usually it's on the market open. It's usually after a stock is halted for a period of time. So when the stock is closed for a while, what happens is it becomes a bottleneck of either sell orders or buy orders. And the price is being readjusted before the actual open. So let's say the stock closes at $20 per share. And all of a sudden, some really bad news comes out, and there is now the price adjustment. There's no longer buyers at $20. Now the buyers are sitting there at $15. Nobody's willing to buy at $15, before $15. There's sellers out there, but maybe they're selling at $17. Well, the buyers are sitting here going, well, I'll buy at $15, but I'm not buying at $17. So naturally, the sellers start working it down and working it down. And then what you have when the market opens, there may be some indications of interest before the market opens back for a stock, either due to the fact that it's closed for trading after hours or beyond after hours, or maybe because it was a situation where it was halted. So when you have a situation like that, what you have to look at is now when it opens, stock was trading at 20, and now it's trading all of a sudden at 15. Why? Because now the market is setting that the valuation is at 15 at that given point in our example. And when you have that open price of 15, there's some market orders that will come in, and people will not be trading at a limit saying, I will sell this at 17. They're saying, I will sell this at the market. This is why oftentimes you see a stock that is being gapped lower all of a sudden really careens down. And then you notice, wait a second, all of a sudden it's starting to come back up, because market orders will hit, and market orders will actually just spray out there an order saying, I want to sell, and at any price that the market is out there. So if you're smart, what you do is you put your limit orders to buy if you feel that it's being sold off too aggressively, much lower than the current price, hoping that the market orders will just flood the market, blow out the stock to a level that it was not really sustainable, like we saw, by the way, after the Amazon announcement that happened last week, where they were getting into the grocery business, or they were buying Whole Foods Market. Remember when they were buying Whole Foods Market, and all of a sudden we saw Kroger and United Natural Foods and Hain Celestial and all these companies just get obliterated? And this is exactly what happened here. Once the stock opened, it gapped lower. Now, it may have been trading actually a little bit more efficiently during the after hours, but the stock closed, let's say it was at 20, but it opened at 15 because it just traded down. And then you had that pre-market number that isn't calculated into the actual high, low, open, and close of the day. So there's day orders, and there's pre-market, and this post-market, or the pre-market and post-market we consider after hours. Those are not considered in the open or close in a day. So when you have that gap down, it could be that there was an orderly move during the after hours, so maybe no gap there possibly, and it was just starting to move lower, versus all of a sudden opens, and you notice that there's just air between the close price and the open price on the upside or the downside. So either one of those plays out pretty well, actually. So that was good. By the way, if you have any questions, you can just run right over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com. And on the top of that, you'll find an area right on the top that says, Ask Andrew. Just click it, ask me a question, and I'll do my best to answer it. And I'll also mention, by the way, while you're there, do me a favor. Do me a favor right now. While you're over on The Disciplined Investor, if you're listening to this show, you're trying to get something out of finance, right? Trying to understand more about markets, trying to understand more about what's going on with the economy. Make some heads or tails out of this whole mess that we've seen that's gone on for so long, even though markets keep on getting close to or hitting new highs, but it's kind of still messy along the way. You could scroll down the page and check out the Arrow strategy, which is an algorithmic strategy that we have. You could check out, of course, the global allocation strategy. You can check out the TDI managed growth strategy, which is a very aggressive trading strategy. All that's on there. There's a couple of videos to watch right on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. The next question comes in from someone who wants to remain anonymous. So we'll just call him Paul. All right. So Paul writes in and he says, variety of things in the beginning. He's been listening to our podcast, loving them. Thank you so much for that. Quote, Paul. He said he was listening to the DH Unplugged podcast when I mentioned the Plunge Protection Committee or the Plunge Protection Team, whatever you want to call them, or the Plunge Protection Program, the Triple P. He said just graduated from a university and he majored in finance. And he said also his teacher was a Federal Reserve insider, so much that he mentioned that he knows the CEOs of every large bank, et cetera. And he said, you know, it's interesting. When I mentioned, he says, the Plunge Protection Committee, I immediately thought of my professor must be on that. Being on the, you know, on the election night, what's going on? He said he made all sorts of money on it. And he said, the thing is that he's asking, is this true? Is this possible? And he also asks, pardon me for a minute. I'm just reading through this very long email here. So I guess the point is that he said that, you know, he's thinking that maybe this is true. Maybe there is this Plunge Protection Committee and maybe something's going on because it seems that this professor made a lot of money before the markets opened on election night, a very significant amount. And you have to wonder if, I guess, what you're saying here, Paul, is that when the markets crashed that night, when Donald Trump was elected that night, and the election results were in, remember we saw the futures get locked down. I mean, they were down 500 points or something like that. And then all of a sudden they turned around and ever since then we've been off to the races. Everything's been going just hunky-dory. So the question the point was that he's making here is yes, you know, some of the insiders that knew about this said, well, the Fed's not going to allow that to happen or the Plunge Protection Team is not going to let that happen. So therefore they said, I'm going to buy in and there was a lot of money made on that. So I guess the point was of this email, Paul, that you're confirming that your belief is that there could possibly be this situation where we have a Plunge Protection Team. Let me give you my two cents on that. I don't know. I got to tell you something. There have been times that, yes, I've seen situations where it looks like there is another hand at work. On the other hand, maybe it's just human nature that people are seeing that something has dropped so dramatically, markets themselves, and like, wow, that's a great price. I want to buy it at that. Don't forget, you know, most people are buyers. When you're involved in the stock market, yeah, you have short sellers and you have buyers. You have those people that are called long onlys and long-term buyers. For the most part, people will look for bargains and then buy. They believe that the stock market provides a long-term benefit, and therefore they're going to find those places that they can, you know, stick their money when it looks like it's a good buying opportunity. People sell on panic. There's a lot far fewer short sellers out there that are trying to make a profit on short sales. People sell on concern. They buy on greed. But generally speaking, most people don't really actively get involved in short selling, especially that for a short period of time. So when you look at this and what happens here is that if you have people that have a proclivity to be buyers over time and they find a point in time where there is the opportunity to invest some more money. I mean, I think what's happening here is that they are finding it is irresistible. They say, well, it could drop a little bit more, but man, this is down pretty good. I'm going to put my money in, which kind of acts like a natural Plunge Protection Team. You get people washing out, and then all of a sudden you get also the investors that are in it for the long haul that have money to distribute, and you know, the likes of hedge funds or brokerage houses. The other thing that's kind of interesting that I'll throw out there is that we do know, and it was communicated very clearly, this is not anything like, well, there's a conspiracy and I think there's something underneath here going on, and this could be. The Japanese Central Bank in Japan announced very clearly that, in particular Japan, with their pension fund, that they were going to be expanding their equity position, which is an extremely large position. I think it was a year and a half ago or so, a very large position into equities on a global basis. Now, we know that they want to sell that yen and bring that yen down. So what they do is that if they buy assets outside of the U.S., they sell the yen. They buy in the other asset dollar or currency. So let's say it's in the U.S., they buy the U.S. dollar. So already they get that going. That's one benefit. And the second thing is that they're going to deploy enormous amounts of capital. And with liquidity down due to the fact that we've seen such an incredible amount of share buybacks over the last number of years, what you have is a supply-demand squeeze. So all of a sudden, you're seeing that demand is going to stay consistent. Supply is being reduced. People aren't really selling because markets haven't had any kind of hiccups. Might as well just hold. There's a lot of buying going on in ETFs, and that's just a broad-based market plop. Just put your money in. Just plunk it in. And what's happening is that you have this recipe for a natural progression, generally speaking, until maybe one of the sources becomes exhausted. Maybe there's a place where Japan is no longer going to be allocating any further money. But remember, there's a lot more money that continually goes into the system on a regular basis because you have more and more money coming in from all the pre-retirees. Now, we know that Japan has an aging population, and they're obviously a poster child for what we are going to be in the next number of years and why the quantitative easing program hasn't worked to stoke inflation, but we do it anyway. But Japan is clearly a player where there is even though the population is aging, they're still putting money into their retirement plans, and the government is putting money into, or the government's retirement plan, pension plans, I should say. And so therefore, when they do that and companies are looking at that, there's just a big allocation that continues to go on because that allocation has expanded over the last couple of years. So you put all this together, and what do you have? You kind of have a natural plunge protection team without the conspiracy theory behind it. You have the idea that there are sovereign wealth funds, hedge funds, governments, individuals, retail, mutual funds, and brokers are on the lookout to deploy assets. And when they find a bargain, well, that's what they do. They deploy it. And because there is such ease these days, as opposed to even maybe 10 years ago. Now, if you want to buy a mutual fund 10 years ago, you buy in the morning, say, oh man, that market's down 15% today. I'm going to buy. So by the time you buy it, if the market's only down 10% at the end of the day, don't forget, mutual funds trade once per day, 4 p.m. Whatever the 4 p.m. close price is of the underlying assets and the NAV or net asset value, that's the price you're going to get. And that's going to be the number for the day. Whereas an ETF, you can purchase throughout the day, throughout the trading day. So if the market is down 15% at any given time during the day, you can just hit the bid and say, or hit the ask and buy it right there. Whereas a mutual fund, you have to wait to the end of the day. So you had to wait for the whole day to pass by, and the markets really wouldn't do any better, let's say, because there isn't any flow really coming into the mutual fund until 4 p.m. that day. And there was no reason for you to buy it at 10 a.m. because you could buy it at 3 p.m. during the day. So the actual allocation of those assets maybe didn't change until the next day. So we compressed that time period for the market dips, intraday versus end of day. So all this is going on. If there's any mystery into where the money's coming from, again, it's because there is a lot of liquidity, a lot more people in 401k plans. There's a lot more movement towards passive ETFs that are index-based and all the other players that I mentioned just a moment ago. So that's my two cents on the whole plunge protection team. I think that their job is for stability, but they have a little bit more patience than just an intraday deal. I mean, so an intraday market's moved down 5%. Is that the worst thing in the world? It's terrible. But you know what? They have a little bit more patience than that, I think. So anyway, my 2 cents on the plunge protection team. Anyway, thanks for your questions. I appreciate that. Let's see here. Talking about biotechs, talking about the healthcare. You know, the other thing that we saw this week that was really interesting, and that I think that, well, first of all, we've seen several announcements this week. The first one was about Amazon getting involved in the deal with Whole Foods and how it was going to possibly change the entire dynamic of grocery shopping, delivery of fresh foods, et cetera, and how they're going to hopefully change and benefit the company. Then the next day we saw an announcement that Amazon is coming out with Amazon or enhancing their Amazon wardrobe, where you can get now, you put a box together of 3 to 5 different apparel and wardrobe items and or 3 or more, and you get it sent to you. You don't pay anything for the postage or the transfer and the freight. You don't pay anything for the actual product until such time you decide to keep it, which is a maximum of 7 days, and then you'll be charged. So in other words, if you get the box and you don't try it on, you don't do anything with it, you're going to get charged after 7 days for all the products. But what you do is if you try these products on, if you don't like them, you just put them back in the same box, which is a reversible and return label is already affixed with an RMA on it, and you send it back to them, and then only the products that you keep, you pay for. And then on top of that, if you keep at least 3 items, I think you get a 10% discount. If you keep 5 items at least, you get a 20% discount on the entire order. Well, that really shook up the big box retailers and a variety of other apparel-related retailers on Tuesday. On Wednesday, Amazon seems to be doing a deal with Nike to do a direct sell of Nike products and with a couple of other bells and whistles on there. That was Wednesday. Thursday, I have no idea. Friday, nothing. Monday, maybe next week. Maybe we'll hear something big. Maybe other manufacturers are going to do deals with them. I look into Under Armour as one that could be interesting. But it is kind of fascinating what is going on with Amazon right now. And there's been some talk about, quote, it's time to break up Amazon. We talked about this on DH Unplugged and theorized on what does that actually mean? How do you break up Amazon? I mean, all right. So if you want to set aside the AWS, their cloud business, you could probably carve that out. If you wanted to maybe carve out, I don't know, apparel, electronics, that would be much more difficult. Now we're talking about retail. The thing you have to worry about with Amazon, by the way, we did see FedEx come out with some really good numbers this week, okay? We saw some really stellar numbers out of Federal Express, and probably because of the price they charge for things is gotten pretty steep. And they're making a lot of profit with it. Plus the matter, we know that oil prices have come down dramatically. But Amazon would like to probably cut better deals. And we already know that they have trucks that are on the road and that they're talking about building a fleet. So I think it's kind of interesting what's going on there and something that really needs to be kind of looked at as a major game changer in the area of retail and I would say more so about the experience. So take a look at that that whole area of companies, by the way, that were hit very hard. I talked about it, I think, last week. And look at the companies, for example, I probably didn't talk about this in depth last week, but look at the companies in the groceries business, like UNFI. We bought a little bit of that. Kroger, which just did a $1 billion share buyback and increased their dividend, and they confirmed their outlook. You can look at Target, Walmart. These all got hit pretty hard on that news. And something that maybe there's an opportunity here. Maybe some of these players are not going to get hurt as dramatically as was thought originally. So take a look at all those names. We'll put the list of stocks always on the show notes of this episode over on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. And just to wrap it up this week, I just want to talk about some of the things that we're going to expect from an economic standpoint. On Monday, the Census Bureau is going to look at the hard good orders, durables, et cetera, and some other information to see how the economy is actually working in terms of the hard goods that are happening there. Tuesday, we're going to see the release of the latest consumer confidence index from the Conference Board and earnings from Darden Restaurants and KB Homes. Restaurant stocks have been, well, they haven't been doing very well lately. On the other hand, home builders have been. We'll see if that trend continues for some time. Pending home sales report again on Wednesday. We're going to be seeing earnings from General Mills, Monsanto, Paychex, and Pier One. The third estimate of the first quarter's GDP is going to be coming out this week as well on Thursday, as well as, of course, the initial unemployment claims report. And we're going to see some earnings from a few people, companies, and discussion from their boards on their outlook from places like Constellation Brands, Micron Technology, Nike, which will be interesting to see, especially because of that the deal they struck with Amazon last week, and Walgreens. And the final Michigan Consumer Sentiment Index will be coming out on this Friday. So we'll be watching that. Markets had a good week overall, and that's good to see that you know that it's still in an upward and positive trend, even though there is some concern, and especially on Friday, there was that concern about the healthcare bill not actually making it to the floor. So we'll see what happens there. We're going to wrap it up a little bit early this week as it is the summer. I'm getting ready for a vacation. I'll tell you a little bit about more about that in the next show so that you can be ready, have those the withdrawals that you're going to probably have there because there's going to be a little bit of time before the next, well, the next show will be on, of course, but then it'll be a one-week hiatus, I believe, at least, for the podcast. Thanks for joining me. Hope you enjoyed the show this week, and I'll see you again next week. Bye-bye.
The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.